Daoud Khan is a 53-year-old Pakistani Catholic refugee who is currently facing deportation at the hands of Citizenship and Immigration Canada. Daoud fled Pakistan in 1999 after being targeted by the SSP, a Sunni Muslim sectarian political organization throughout Pakistan. The SSP has consistently targeted both the Shiite Muslim and Christian minority communities in Pakistan in their efforts to have Pakistan become a strictly Sunni Muslim country. Daoud Khan, as an extremely well-known tabla player, singer, and member of Pakistan's Christian minority, became a target of the SSP. While living in Pakistan, Daoud's house was targeted, his younger daughters were consistently harassed, and he was eventually kidnapped, held for 2 nights, and tortured, brutalized by the SSP in their efforts to force Daoud to publicly convert to Sunni Islam. Despite these facts, presented to Citizenship and Immigration Canada, Daoud faces deportation from Canada in the coming weeks. You are currently listening to Daoud Khan's music, recorded at the studios of CKUT Radio in Montreal. I had the opportunity to speak with Daoud about his case, the persecution he faced in Pakistan, and his current efforts to halt his pending deportation order from Immigration Canada.
My name is Daoud Khan. I born in 1950, 31st of July, and I came here in Canada because of I had been trouble in Quetta and Lahore in Pakistan from the fundamentalist and fanatic group, SSP group, and in a program I was giving the awards as a judge, I was elected. I had given the first prize to the Christian girl. The second one was a person of a SSP group I didn't know about. But when I suggest to give the first prize to a Christian girl, it created the problems. I was very upset. I said, what's happened? And they caught me at few place. Because of you are Christian and you gave the prize to the Christian girl, that's why you discrimination, and we won't let you go away from us. We will kill you or we will bother you so much and we'll bother your children also. At that time, in 98, end of the 98, it was July, August, I felt the circumstances is being very changed very quickly or very fast than I felt. And once or twice when one of my daughters came and she was crying and she was weeping at that time, said, Abu, the Muslim guys caught us and they wanted to pick us up and... After that, I went to the police station to tell them the situation, and they didn't consider us, or they told us, oh, nothing. After that, one of my head of the department officer came at Quetta, and we were invited in that show. 3-4 people sang over there and played for them, and... I requested to my head of the department that, sir, I want to transfer myself from Quetta to Lahore. He said, oh, okay, you can come and you can tell me tomorrow. I'll be in the office. Mm-hmm. And next day I went to him and mm-hmm. I said, he considered my the request. And after 1 month or more than 1 month, mm-hmm. little bit. I had been transferred from Quetta to Lahore. Then I thought that I'll be free, I'll be get rid of them. Mm-hmm. And I was 2-3 months I was working, I was going here and there. But meanwhile, I was hiding myself, and I was very afraid and feared from them. So once I had been coming from a program, I was waiting for the taxi or for the wagon or bus, and suddenly the jeep came in front of me, and there were 5 men. They came out from the jeep, and they captured me, and I said, "What are you doing? What? Where are you bringing me up?" They said, "I will teach, will tell you, will teach you the lesson, and don't worry." After half an hour drive, they reached at one place, I don't know where it was, and they entered me in a house. And then I saw what's happening with me. Inquired the same situation which I had been suffering from Quetta. And then I knew that the same person came here, and they caught me, and they began to beat me. And after 3-4 hours, they did with me a very, very bad thing, which I don't want to disclose. But now I want to disclose that they persecuted me badly. When it was a 7 o'clock morning, 6 o'clock, they, turn by turn, they used to come to my room, and they beat me, and one by one they go, and other person come.
Okay.
So they, I mean, left me about 7 o'clock near to my home, and at that time they disclosed that if you gonna be change your religion or you say the kalma of Muhammad, then we will leave you. Otherwise, it's a great thing. It's a very, very bad thing. You keep this 2-3 booklets. They had given me to read it carefully. Then I felt that now the circumstances has been changed in very dangerous position.
Can you talk about your persecution? Do you feel that there was a right-wing, let's say, persecution from Sunni Muslim organization, the SSP, because you were in Pakistan and around the world are a very well-known musician? You've played music around the world, although you do come from a religious minority in Pakistan.
Yeah, that's it. I can think this is the main problem, and this is the main cause. I'm different among themselves, among the musicians or the singers. At that time, in the TV station, the new generation, new guys, they wanted to introduce themselves by hook or by crook. Or if they have no talent, or if they have talent, they wanted to come on the screen, on the television. That's why they felt that this Christian guy should not be like so fame.
Can you speak about the situation in Pakistan in general?
I'm not the alone persecuted over there. In 97, they burned the one village, all of the village. It's Shantinagar. Shantinagar. They, I mean, harassed around the, all the village, whole the night. And they burned that village. They pulled the clothes of the girls and of the women, and they did, and they, many, many people they killed. It was a great, great, great event in the history of the Pakistan. The many churches burned.
Can you talk about the connection between the SSP right-wing Sunni organization in Pakistan and the government of Pakistan, because there is a lot of silence about religious persecution in the country, whether it's against the Shia Muslim minority or the Christian minority.
Yeah. 1 month ago, there was a big attack between the Sunni and between the Muslim Shia, when they were praising the Shia people, and the Sunni people, they hit or they throw something like bomb or like this type of thing, and there were many Shia killed because of this habit, and all they, they quarreled between Sunni and Shia. It's a great event last month. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Maybe can you talk about how you feel about Canada? You've come here as a refugee claimant, but the Canadian government has refused to acknowledge the persecution that you faced as a musician, as a Christian musician, well-known in Pakistan. Are you surprised by the reaction that you got from the Immigration and Refugee Board panel and also in general from the government of Canada?
I'm feeling when I came here, I felt there is a very peace. It's a very peaceful country. I feel here a little bit annoyed with the government because they didn't consider to accept my case, because I was very hopeful, and I was very satisfied. I said, no, they will consider my case, and they won't let me go back to the Pakistan. If I would have gone to the Pakistan, my life can be finished or in the danger. So that's why, as I'm feeling now, the situation of myself, it is when I heard or when I received the deportation orders, now I'm feeling that I am more worse than Pakistan. Because I know that when I would go back to the Pakistan, I might be killed or I might be finished, and my family also can be finished or eliminated.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about why people should support you? You're demanding right now a stay on your deportation order?
Yes, because the people did know about my situation, about my story. They are very close to me. They can feel my feelings. They can feel, because in the courtroom, you know that there is a 2 hour, 1 hour, and they can't judge the person's the story or the situation. They can't see the inner side of myself. Mostly they see the faces of the client. I have been living for 4 years here, and I have been listening, or I have been, seeing these things. It's very terrible. In these days, when I received my deportation orders, I feel and I am becoming sick and sick and sick, and I'm not feeling good.
You've been listening to an interview with Dawood Khan, a 53-year-old Pakistani Catholic refugee who is currently facing deportation at the hands of Citizenship and Immigration Canada. Dawood Khan, as an extremely well-known tabla player, singer, and member of Pakistan's Christian minority, became the target of the SSP, a Sunni Muslim sectarian political group throughout Pakistan. While living in Pakistan, Dawood's house was targeted, his younger daughters were consistently harassed, and he was eventually kidnapped, held for 2 nights, and tortured by the SSP in their efforts to force Dawood to convert to Sunni Islam. Despite these facts presented to Immigration Canada, Daoud faces deportation in the coming weeks. We will now hear a selection of Daoud Khan's music.
Thank you.
You have been listening to music from Daoud Khan, a 53-year-old Pakistani Catholic refugee who is currently facing deportation at the hands of Citizenship and Immigration Canada. Daoud Khan, as an extremely well-known tabla player, singer, and member of Pakistan's Christian minority, became a target of the SSP, a Sunni Muslim sectarian political group throughout Pakistan. I had the opportunity to speak with Harsha Walia, an organizer with the No One Is Illegal campaign and the Action Committee of Pakistani Refugees in Montreal, about Daoud's case and the current efforts to halt his pending deportation from Canada.
Daoud fled from Pakistan in 1999 after he was targeted by the Sipe Sahaba Pakistan. Sipe Sahaba is a militant fundamentalist, right-wing fundamentalist Sunni extremist group that frequently targets Shia minorities, but is also known to target other religious minorities such as the Christians. And Daoud, being quite a prominent Christian in Pakistan, was one of their quite obvious targets in Quetta. And for those who are sort of familiar with the South Asian politics, Quetta has been sort of at the forefront of communalism and sectarianism, with only, what, last month, with over 42 people killed during the massacres in Quetta. And Quetta has a history of communalism and anti-Shia, anti-Christian programs that are conducted by the SSP. So while he was living in Quetta, his house was targeted, he was kidnapped, his daughters were harassed on their way back and forth from school to the point where they stopped attending school. They were harassed constantly. From then, they moved to Lahore within a few months, by the end of 1999 and early 2000. But the SSP is a nationwide network, and so they weren't spared from any harassment and brutality and kidnappings when they were there. And he was kidnapped in Lahore in 1999 and held for 2 nights and brutalized and tortured and threatened that he would have to convert to Sunni Islam or he would face the death of himself and his family. So it was facing this that Daoud fled from Pakistan in April of 2000 in the hopes of establishing a new and secure life here in Canada. And his family continues to remain in hiding in Pakistan. They flee from city to city. They migrate from city to city within Pakistan, but this has forced them to be on the move, to remain underground. His daughters yet remain in hiding and are not able to attend school. His wife is unable to work to sustain herself because they are underground, so they're just sort of migrating from friends and family's homes throughout Pakistan. And that's one thing that the IRB frequently tells people who flee from Pakistan is that they think that the danger in Pakistan is localized. They say, well, if you're from Quetta, if you're from Lahore, if you're from Karachi, why don't you move to somewhere else in Pakistan? And the reality of the situation in Pakistan is that SSP is a well-funded terrorist organization who has its arms throughout Pakistan, and people are not secure migrating from one part of Pakistan to the other, such as the case of Daoud.
Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to religious persecution brought to people by the SSP, there seems to be a very blanket non-recognition of this religious persecution, both by Immigration Canada and also the authorities here in Canada. Can you maybe give your perspectives as to why there has been no focus given to this extremely devastating situation for the case of Daoud Khan and many others?
Well, there's definitely implications for the Canadian and U.S. governments in funding groups like the SSP, and this goes back to the 1979 when, for example, the U.S. negotiated a $3.2 billion deal with the Pakistanis, with Zia-ul-Huq, who was the military dictator of Pakistan and who was supported with this $3.2 billion package of America during the Soviet-Afghanistan war. There was, you know, an increased flow of capital since 1979, which supported military dictators like Zia and now Musharraf. And you saw just consistent ignoring of these dictators and sort of communalism, regionalism, and sectarianism that they support to maintain their own internal factionism. So you've seen since 1973, internally, Pakistan has been transformed into a theocratic religious state with quite a lot of religious fundamentalism that is supported actively by the U.S. and Canada since 1979. With the war on terrorism, you have a deal that was negotiated by the U.S. government, specifically the World Bank offered relief to Pakistan as a highly indebted poor country, the HIPC initiatives. Right after Pakistan vowed to be an ally in the war on terrorism, you saw this huge debt relief with the HIPC initiative. And there's clear links between, you know, turning a blind eye towards religious fundamentalism in the hopes of saying that, well, our allies are good allies, so let's not criticize them because they're supporting us in our war on terrorism. And in 1979, they were supporting us in our war, the Soviet-Afghanistan war. So there's been a clear link starting from the 1970s up until now with all these different wars and all these different phases of U.S.-funded terrorism in the Middle East and in South Asia.
Now, there seems to be a very heavy human impact to this relationship between the Pakistani government and authorities and Western nations. And that impact is seen in the hundreds of faces of Pakistani refugee claimants who have come here to Canada to flee persecution that they faced in Pakistan. So maybe can you give some perspectives as to that? We're seeing this huge migration of refugees here in Canada. They're fleeing a persecution which has some links, as you explained, to Western authorities and are again facing persecution here in Canada, but at this time at the hands of the Immigration and Refugee Board and Immigration Canada.
Yeah, there are, in terms of Montreal, the Pakistani community is the largest refugee community in Montreal. There's over 200 right now within the Action Committee. Certainly there are more who are facing deportation, and a lot of it is linked to this post-911 discrimination, but also the pre-911 systemic discrimination of the Pakistani cases. The Pakistani cases are quite complicated, and I think it's important to talk about them in an open way, in the sense that the very typical disgusting stereotype of Pakistani refugees is that either that they're lying or that they're economic migrants. And a lot of that also, you know, goes back to the fact that there are over 3 million refugees who have fled into Pakistan from neighboring areas of the Soviet Union and of Afghanistan and the Pashtun areas, both since 1979 and with the now war on Afghanistan. And it has a huge refugee population. So you have internally displaced people within Pakistan and then Pakistani refugees, all of whom are considered Pakistani refugees. And it's important to talk about what is this, you know, quote-unquote economic migration. Conventional refugees is only someone who can pretty much show political persecution, can show some sort of evidence of torture or beatings or, you know, bullet wounds, etc. But Pakistan is one of the most devastated countries in terms of war, factionalism, and being sort of in the middle of South Asia and Middle East. It's been very strategic to imperialist interests, and it's been devastated by those interests. And it's important to talk about the fact that even if people are fleeing poverty or fleeing desperation or fleeing those types of situations, they have a right to be here as much as anyone else who has a right to be here. But, so, you know, it's complicated because there certainly is the very obvious overt political persecution that people like Daoud and many others face. But at the same time, there's the more subtleties of migration itself, which so many people are forced to either hide or are forced to sort of make into something more severe or are forced to say, well, this is what happened to me because Immigration Canada won't recognize, you know, quote-unquote economic migration or the reasons that people have to leave just because they can't survive. They can't feed their families in the economy of Pakistan and the devastation of Pakistan. So there's two sort of factors that need to be talked about when we talk about the Pakistani refugees and the hardships they face within the IRB, both in terms of the systemic discrimination that so many refugees face, but also the complications of, you know, what is a refugee itself, the very definition that the IRB even accepts.
Mm-hmm. Now let's go back to the case of Dawood. As mentioned, he's an extremely well-known musician internationally, and he's also become a very vital part to the South Asian community here in Montreal. Can you maybe speak about some of the organizing that is happening around his case? What points are people focusing on specifically in regards to the demand for him to remain in Canada?
Well, with regards to Dawood, yeah, as you were mentioning, he's quite well known, so his support has been incredible. He's received support from a lot of his musical fans, a lot of musicians who know his work, also from the musical department at Concordia, McGill, and also a lot of the Sejup in schools where he's played. He's played in mosques and temples and churches, and they've all supported him. There's been a lot of political support for Dawood, sort of, you know, support across the South Asian board with regards to, you know, Christians, Muslims, Indians, Pakistanis, all who are very aware of his work, who have supported him. And the mobilizing effort has been quite incredible with regards to even bringing the community together to say, okay, you know, we all know Dawood, we all know his work, and it all needs, you know, he's someone that needs to be protected. The other thing with regards to his case as well is that there's a prominent music school who's actually offered to sponsor him, which is currently being ignored by the IRB, and he has been working his whole time here as a musician and as a musical teacher, but he's received quite prominent job offers and sponsorships. So we're urging for the IRB and CIC to intervene on those grounds, the fact that on humanitarian, compassionate grounds, and on the grounds that he actually is supporting himself and that there are people who are willing to sponsor him and who are quite eager for him to remain in Canada and to have his life and his work be protected.
Mm-hmm. Now, as an organizer with No One Is Illegal and also someone who has done a lot of support work for the Action Committee of Pakistani Refugees, can you maybe give your perspectives as to Immigration Canada? Obviously, they've put their foot down in regards to Dawood Khan's deportation. There's a scheduled date. So maybe give kind of some reflections as to the policies of Immigration Canada in regards to Pakistani refugees and specifically Dawood's case?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it just sort of goes back to what I was saying, that the Pakistani refugees sort of face this double jeopardy of, first of all, not being recognized, facing political persecution with regards to the SSP, which is what most of them face, or, you know, others who also face persecution at the hand because they're members of the People's Party, of grassroots movements, etc. But then also the double jeopardy of not being recognized because they may not be facing very overt, quote-unquote, political persecution that devastates a lot of the other parts of the world. And then also just the systemic post-911 legislation that's affected all refugee communities, the streamlining of the Immigration Protection Act, the fact that there's one judge, that, you know, the bribery scandals right now in Montreal with the IRB judges, the fact that the appeal system has not yet been implemented, sort of the systemic criminalization of refugee movements, the equating of terrorism with asylum seekers, the subjugation of spaces that people from the South are terrorists, the blatant racism evolved around that. And then also just sort of the reactionary measures of the CIC and IRB in the past 3 years, because so many refugee communities have been fighting back in Toronto and in Montreal, specifically with regards to the Palestinian committees, the Algerian committees, the Project Threadbare in Toronto, and there's increasing repression and reactive measures on the part of the CIC and IRB because people are fighting back, people are refusing to be repressed, people are going to great measures, and the sanctuary movement is expanding because of this reality that people are being repressed and state repression is increasing. So at the same time, you have reactionary measures, you know, such as the arrest of Mohammed Sherfi, which has huge implications for all refugee communities who are trying to fight back. So, you know, basically this message by CIC that don't bother fighting back because if you do, we're basically going to target you and deport you, so you may as well remain silent. We're not going to listen to you anyway, so why bother? And that's the message that was actually given to quite a few refugees who were deported, Pakistani refugees who were deported in November. And they were told, stop doing your demos. Don't even think about going into sanctuary, because we will promise you that you'll be able to come back on immigration. And these were sort of the messages and, you know, sort of subtle threats they were given, that don't fight for your rights, because we're going to offer you some sort of backhanded deal, which they didn't anyway. So that's been sort of persistent in the Action Committee, these sort of messages that have gone out to them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's finish up with why you feel it's important for people to support these movements of refugees who are fighting back against deportation, and specifically Pakistani refugees here in Montreal.
Well, I mean, the movements in general, for all those who are working on any social justice movement, the struggles for refugee rights are central to that. When people talk about the anti-war movement, this is sort of the human face of the anti-war movement, those who are fleeing these wars. When people talk about anti-globalization, these are the people who are fleeing, you know, Western-style development, G8 policies of war, development, occupation, dispossession, etc. These are central to those movements. They're here at home. People have to honor those struggles. The center of sort of anti-border, anti-detention struggles, the right to life and dignity. With regards to the Pakistani refugees, again, it's important. They're the largest refugee community in Montreal. Post 9/11 legislation particularly targets those from South Asian Arab Muslim descent, of which obviously the Pakistani refugees are quite severely targeted. And also, the Pakistani refugees, I think, are quite crucial in expanding our own analysis of, well, what is a refugee? You know, do people have to bear the burden of proof of certain political persecution? And I think it's central to our own analysis of what is freedom of movement and what are migration rights.
You have been listening to an interview with Harsha Walia, an organizer with the No One Is Illegal campaign and the Action Committee of Pakistani Refugees in Montreal, concerning the case of Daoud Khan, a 53-year-old Pakistani Catholic refugee who is currently facing deportation at the hands of Citizenship and Immigration Canada. Daoud is one of hundreds of Pakistani refugees who are currently facing deportation from Canada in the coming weeks and months. If you would like more information concerning the situation facing Daoud Khan and Pakistani refugees in Montreal facing deportation, contact the No One Is Illegal campaign at 514-859-9023 or email noneisillegal@tao.ca. This report was produced for CKUT Radio in Montreal by Stefan Christophe.